When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, our first guest of the day is a cellist. And in her new book, Cello, A Journey Through Silence to Sound, she weaves together the lives of four remarkable cellists who suffered various forms of persecution, injury and misfortune. She joins us now. Great to have you on the show with us, Kate Kennedy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. First of all, Kate, what's your own relationship with the cello? Because I read that it's a complicated one.
Yeah, so I am a cellist. I do play professionally, but when I was in my late teens, I was very, very serious about the cello. I injured my arm permanently and lost the ability to play for quite a long time. And now I have to be very careful. It's a kind of lifelong injury from overpractice. So I love the cello. I feel like it's my identity, but I can't play full time. And so this book is my way of exploring that. And, you know, what does that mean if, say, you've had a 40-year international career and you suddenly find you can't play, or if your cello is taken away from you, or if it saves your life, all these different scenarios.
Yeah, interesting. It's a great idea for a book. And the first one that you touch on is Pal Herman. Was that something to do with World War II?
That's right. Yeah, this was a story that has become huge. So Pal Herman was a Hungarian cellist, a massive child prodigy. That he was Jewish in the 1930s in Berlin. So obviously that's, you know, pretty terrible. And he was chased across Europe by the Nazis and ultimately captured and murdered. But his cello was left behind and it was rescued. And so I spend a lot of the book looking at his life story, following in his footsteps, but also trying to find this now lost cello that is the nearest we can get to recovering him himself. And I wrote the book and still couldn't find the cello. I'd done calls across the BBC, across Europe, everything. And a week before the book launch, it turned up.
So no.
We had this incredible moment on BBC in the UK and then in London at a big concert hall where we were able to play the cello. And his daughter, who's now 96, heard it for the first time in 85 years.
Oh,
and it was
wow.
Like the father coming back to her. It was just incredible.
Oh, that's wonderful. Did the daughter play at 96? Did she play during her life?
No, she never played, which is why the family sold it in the 50s to fund her education as a medic. So, you know, they weren't cellists. This cello is too special to just have kicking around in your attic. It's, you know, it's really valuable. So she doesn't play, but she got to hear it. And in fact, then the president of the European Parliament picked up the story and we were all invited. The cello, Corrie, the daughter and me were invited to Brussels in January for the sort of Holocaust commemoration day. And there was the cello right at the centre of the hemisphere, and tiny little Corrie, age 96, who's about like 4 foot nothing, did this incredible dignified testimony of her father's story and our story to find the instrument, and this standing ovation from the packed parliament. It was just such a moment.
What a lovely story. And is that cello with the family now, or is it in a museum somewhere, or still in Brussels?
It's in Germany, actually. It's okay. Owned by a music school in Germany, but they now know its story. So it's doubled its value, but it has its story with it and it's not going to be separated from it again, which is wonderful. They had no idea what it was they had.
Crikey, it just shows you, doesn't it? There's one man's rubbish is another man's treasure, so they say.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what is the history of the cello? Does it date back many, many centuries?
Yeah, well, yeah, good. So, you know, hundreds of years. Started off the viol family, which were, you know, slightly different sort of miniature string instruments, and the cello kind of emerged from that. But the big name really was Stradivarius in Cremona, Amati, and then Stradivarius, and they kind of perfected the model. And people have tried all kinds of different shapes of cellos and violins since, but really it goes back to their blueprint. So they're sort of, you know, 1700, basically, around then. And that's when the really fabulous, great instruments date from. And we're still playing them when we can. And people have been copying them ever since.
What is, can you just answer me this? Because I know it's very bigger, but similar to a violin. Is there such a thing as a violoncello?
Yeah, well, that's its full name. Violoncelle in French, violoncello. We just call it cello.
It's easier.
Easy. Yeah. Sometimes you get the apostrophe if you're being really pernickety, but basically it's a cello, a violin. Yeah.
Interesting. So we've talked about Pal Herman. Who was Lise Christiani?
Yeah, she's an amazing woman. So in the 1840s, she was this young kind of like prodigal infant in Paris. She was trained up by her father and learned the cello. And no women really played the cello solo in those days because, you know, shock horror, you've got to sit with your legs apart. It's a bit dodgy, imagine. She was the first female cello soloist as a teenager. And she became this kind of fated name around Europe and went around all the royal courts and played in all the big concert halls with her Stradivarius. And then what was really awesome about her is that in her early 20s, she decided, I'll go to Russia, and I'll not just go to Russia to do some gigs, which is quite a standard thing to do in those days. I'll actually go pretty much as an explorer with a Stradivarius. And she went right across Siberia to areas that weren't charted and had never heard Western classical music. And she had a cello wrapped up in wolf fur being dragged along on a sledge. And this cello is like literally the most valuable instrument in the world now. Right. And she dropped it in bogs and, you know, nearly got sunk in a boat when a whale was banging on the hull of it. And in fact, she was playing on the deck and the passengers of the boat thought that the whale was really attracted by the cello music. And that was why it was trying to capsize their boat. And just incredible actors. And she died out there. She contracted typhoid and died within 2 days of becoming ill. And the cello was rescued by the French ambassador, brought back to Paris. And it's now the most valuable cello in the world in the museum in Cremona. And what I love about it is that it's got cracks in the front from the temperature changes. So it literally bears the scars of their adventures, where from when it's been freezing cold and then the sun's been on it and it's warmed up. And so she vanished. She's lost. We don't know where her body is, somewhere in Siberia. Oh. But this is now this prize, like the crown jewels, you know, in Cremona. But it's got these scars on it, which I find really brilliant.
Yeah, you've got to leave it as it is. I mean, it would be sacrilege to try and make it right again, wouldn't it? It's telling a history, telling a story. Yeah.
Exactly, it's part of its story.
So Pal was obviously a man, Lise was a woman. Nowadays, is it 50-50 that, you know, some are men cellists and some are women cellists, or is it still quite male-dominated?
No, it's a good 50-50. And there are some instruments that are more male-dominated, like the organ or, I don't know, the tuba, things like that, that are kind of boys' instruments. And that's changing. Sometimes some instruments slower than others, but it's changing. You get great kind of female advocates for the organ or for the trumpet, and then you get a wave of young girls starting that instrument. But cello now, within the 20th century, has become as much female as male, I think, which is
quite
great
right.
for me.
Quite right. Yeah. Of course it is. And I'm looking forward to hearing about Anita Lasker-Wolfish because I did an interview recently about the women's orchestra in Auschwitz-Birkenau. She was a member of that, I believe.
That's right. Yeah. So she was 16 when she was taken to Auschwitz. She was already a brilliant young cellist. And for some reason that she still doesn't know, she's 100 now. So I spent a lot of time
talking
with
her. She's still alive.
She's an incredible incredible woman. But she, as she was having her hair shaved and having this awful number tattooed on her arm, she somehow thought it was relevant to tell the girl prisoner doing this that she was a cellist. God knows why. You know, what do you talk about under those circumstances? But the girl said, oh, that's incredible. Well, you're saved because there's an orchestra here, weirdly, and the cellist is dead. We need someone to play the bass line. So there's a spare cello. So that was that. And that was the way that she just about managed to survive Auschwitz, because the orchestra had slightly better conditions and they weren't sent out for hard labor because the Germans wanted them to play marches, to march the other prisoners in and out of the gates when they were doing their horrendous labor out in the fields, but also for their own entertainment. They were like a human jukebox, basically. So on Sunday afternoons, they'd do these concerts for the SS and they'd say what they wanted them to play and off they go. So Anita did that. And the cello, you know, was her ticket through Auschwitz and was her life ever since. She started a huge orchestra in England, the English Chamber Orchestra, when she managed to get to England after the war. And she is a formidable figure.
Is she?
Oh my goodness, she's formidable. Yeah, I love her. She's brilliant. But she, you know, every single member of her family, she made them learn the cello because that was, yeah, that's what she does. It's all about the cello for her.
And does she talk about her time then? I mean, not just about the cello, but about her time, because I know some people that were there understandably don't want to talk about it, but others don't want the world to forget it.
Yeah, well, she didn't talk about it for a very long time. She just simply refused to ever play in Germany until the, you know, 80s and 90s. She simply didn't talk about it. And she also found, kind of very sadly, that when she got to London, no one wanted her to talk about it. People just didn't want to know. It was all too difficult.
Too soon.
Too soon, too much. And so she didn't. But when she realised that people were starting to forget, or that there were generations of school children growing up who didn't understand these atrocities had happened and how to stop them happening again, she felt she had a moral responsibility to go around and talking. So she's spoken at the Bundestag. She went for about 20 years, went round schools, particularly in Germany, talking to children, showing them her tattoo, explaining what happens. And, you know, who knows whether it's done any good. I know that she's deeply depressed at the situation politically at the moment in Europe. And it's very, very sad that she has lived to see the rise of intolerance of any kind to any group of people, which seems to be so prominent. But she did her best. She did what she could for a long time.
Yeah. Amazing that she's still around at the age of 100. And is she in good health?
Yeah. She smokes like a chimney. You know, she's not trying. I don't know why I'm still here. But yeah.
Bless her. And the final one of the four is Amadeo Baldovino.
Yeah, so he's an Italian guy from Trieste in the north of Italy. And he played in a piano trio, the Trieste piano trio, in the 60s. And they went on a South American tour and found that their flight was grounded from Montevideo to Buenos Aires because it was very, very thick fog. But there was one boat that would sail across the 250 kilometres of the River Plata, which, as it turns out, was a terrible idea because it's full of sunken wrecks. It's an absolutely treacherous route. And they couldn't see where they were going because this is pre-sat-nav. So they crashed into a hulk, caught fire, and everyone on board had to jump off, basically. It's completely hideous, middle of the night, total darkness, thick fog. And so Amadeo had to jump off with the Stradivarius cello that he had, which then promptly floated off down the river into the darkness. And incredibly, they were saved. The trio were saved and picked up by a naval boat after hours of just floating along in the middle of nowhere, thinking they were going to die. And eventually some divers found a floating cello case, thinking it was another body. Turns out it was a cello. And then, you know, the press were there. There were cameras flashing at him, microphones pushed in front of him. And he opens this case at the naval base and realizes that it's just full of black, soggy, matchstick-sized bits of wood. And the cello had completely disintegrated.
Oh,
it's unbelievable.
What a shame.
But then incredibly, after a year of reconstruction, the kind of top cello makers in England managed to stick it all back together, patch it up, put other bits of instruments to fill up the gaps that were missing, and presented it back to him. And he reckons it sounded better than ever. And it's still being played around Europe now. So
all four of these cellos are still in existence.
Yes, that's right.
That's great to hear. And you've written this book. There's obviously lots to say about these four people. Do you think there's another book in you, or are there more you can find with interesting stories?
There are lots more. I mean, I'm writing two books at the moment, one about British music, British 20th century music and landscape and sounds of place and, you know, how music is linked to place. The other is about a wonderful cellist who played with nightingales on the BBC. It was a first broadcast outside a studio in the 20s. So I'm writing about two different moments in sort of, you know, 20th century British music. But there are loads of other cellists I could have written about. And, you know, the one thing that's been really incredible in the aftermath of publishing the book, and it's, you know, doing really well, thank goodness, is that hundreds of musicians have contacted me who've been silenced in a way that I have been, you know, sort of part-time at least, and talking about their injuries for the first time, because there's a real taboo around being injured as a musician. And, you know, it affects your career, affects your mental health, all sorts of things. And so there's a whole community emerging of injured musicians or silenced musicians who are speaking out about their experiences. And that, I didn't see that coming, but it's such a privilege to be at the centre of that kind of new movement.
Yeah, it seems such a shame that your injury couldn't have been, I mean, it's a shame that you've got an injury anyway, but if it had been on your leg, it might not have affected something that you're so passionate about.
Exactly, yeah. When you've got your arm in a sling, you're not much use as a chap.
Yeah, bless you. But you're still playing part-time, are you?
Yes, exactly. And I can play early music, so a Baroque instrument, which is much lighter, and I can play a little bit. But it's given me the opportunity to be a writer, to explore all kinds of other ways of talking about music and sharing my passion for music with people that I wouldn't have probably explored had I just been playing all the time. So for me, it's been a kind of blessing. For other people, it's a life-changing disaster. And I'm just really interested in exploring that with them.
Of course. Well, this particular book is called Cello, A Journey Through Silence to Sound. For our listeners, we're selling it on our website right now, tre.radio, and the author is Kate Kennedy, who we're chatting to. I know you do lots of other things as well as writing and playing the cello. You've got teaching, etc. Do you have a website as well, Kate?
Yes, I do. I think it's drkatekennedy.com.
I think you're correct. I've got it up right here. I just wanted you to say it.
I don't look it up much. Yeah, www.drkatekennedy.com.
It is. It's my phone number. People say, what's your phone number? And I say, well, I don't know. You don't use it yourself. Bless you. Thank you for sharing the book with us. Take care now.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.